This episode is brought to you by Tuk Tuk Box, sharing Southeast Asian stories at your doorstep. Learn more at tuktukbox.com. That's T-U-K-T-U-K-box.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we dedicate our stories to elders, grandparents, and family members who came before us.
Some people called on the phone, "What time is your appointment?" "Mine's 2:45. Our friend, the dentist, he was 3:30. And it was like a social event.
It's a small island. A lot of them I knew when I was a kid. So it was, you know, to really help them feel like they weren't alone.
It's partly this communal nature of food. And so it can operate as a bridge, not just between neighbors and friends, but also between the living and the dead.
Listen to Meat and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hello and welcome to Life's a Banquet, a show about all things edible, spreadable, pourable, and also injectable, because I just got vaccinated, with your host, co-host me, Zara Tangora.
And me, Nicole Bailey. I got my second vaccine yesterday.
Wait, didn't you? I thought you got the Johnson & Johnson one the first time.
No, I had Pfizer.
Oh, okay. I was just like, you just got two to be safe. No, what happens if you get all three? I think that's the question no one's answering.
To the hospital. Yeah, because really? they accidentally double vaccinated some people at an old folks home and they got sick.
Did they? Are they still with us? Do we know?
I don't
feel wonderful today, I have to be honest. But I can speak Italian. No, heavens no. I got the Moderna, as I think I mentioned on a previous episode. I was hoping it would help me speak fluent Italian because it sounds Italian.
Yes. Yeah, I had Pfizer. I felt fine the first one. Today, I got it yesterday. I felt totally fine yesterday, but today, like right around 24 hours afterwards, I felt kind of tired, but that's all. A little achy, a little tired, maybe a little feverish, but very mild.
Samesies. I went for a run earlier and found myself having a difficult time running, but I think it's actually because I got new running shoes and not because of coronavirus. They're supposed to be great.
Didn't you just get new running shoes a while ago? Like, because I made fun of you for wearing Nikes?
Well, listen, here's the situation. I put a lot of miles on my shoes, so I have to switch shoes every couple months, get a new pair maybe like every 4 months, 5 months. Oh, sometimes I go too long and they get holes in the bottom. But I did just get a new pair of shoes recently, and after deliberating about it, I finally pulled the trigger on a different pair than I normally get, and they're so fucking hard on the bottom that like it really makes it difficult to run. I want to like them, but I don't. So take that, Nike.
So you would give them 5 stars if you could?
No. I'd give them 5 stars if the rating system was out of 3 million stars.
Oh, you'd like, I wish I could give it 0 stars. That's what they say on Yelp.
Exactly, yes. I wish and pray. In fact, if I had one genie wish, if I had a genie in a bottle and I got one wish, I'd wish that I could give my new shoes 0 stars.
Which ones are they?
Well, not to just besmirch the name of beloved Nike, but they're the React Millers.
Sienna Miller's brand tennis shoes.
Well, they made me think of Mac Miller, and then I was like, these are probably cool. But they aren't. They're no Mac Miller.
Makes me think of Sienna Miller, the British actress who used to date Jude Law.
Makes me think of my ex-boyfriend, Dan Miller, who probably hates me. Oh. And I hope he's not listening
to the podcast.
His mom, I noticed, follows our Instagram, our podcast Instagram, and likes a bunch of our photos, which is sweet but confusing because I would think that her tender ears would be offended by this. Mrs. Miller, if you are listening, I've always thought you were a lovely woman, and I hope you're doing well. This is Nicole speaking. I'm just kidding.
I hope that you haven't gotten divorced and reverted back to your maiden name, in which case you wouldn't be Mrs. Miller.
Let us all pray. My second genie wish would be to pray that Mrs. Miller has not gotten a divorce. I'm expecting a handwritten letter in the mail now, to be honest.
To our Instagram address.
Anything new in Ben Affleck news this week?
You know what? Yes, actually.
Oh, Lord. I was... My third wish from this genie, my third and final wish, is that there would have been new Ben Affleck news. Now I have wasted all my wishes.
I stumbled across this by accident, but it's just really funny that it ended up, there's just an accidental Ben Affleck news that I came across this week. So basically, I was reading about how Katie Seagal, Peggy Bundy, wonderful actress.
Wonderful. Not related to Steven Seagal or a seagull.
Right.
That's lies.
Correct. She is sober, and I was just reading about that, which then led to, like, 12 celebrities. I don't know, some stupid thing that was like, 12 celebrities you didn't know were sober, but I knew that all of them were sober because I pay attention. And somehow that led me to an article about how Bradley Cooper helped Ben Affleck and Brad Pitt get sober.
Isn't that just adorable? A bunch of old whites. Just helping each other. Privileged old hot whites.
Yeah. So yeah, Ben Affleck has been struggling with his alcoholism. He's had to go to rehab a couple of times. And the most recent time, Jennifer Garner actually drove him to rehab. So she, you know, is involved in that, which I think is interesting. So
it isn't. Well, I mean, they have kids together. But, you know... Yeah. I don't dislike that many celebrities, except for obviously Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are on my shit list, but I'm just kidding. I don't really have many feelings about them. I think it's funny that we talk about Ben Affleck this much though.
It is. He just keeps coming up in the news, you know?
He's everywhere. He's, in my opinion, he's unavoidable, but I will say that I don't care for Bradley Cooper at all.
Me either.
I find him to be almost insufferable. His grimace, his squinty eyes, his pokey long nose. He just seems like he has a bad attitude. Seems like he'd be very bad in bed.
He seems like the character that he plays in The Hangover is his real personality.
Yes, that is him. He didn't know he was acting. They were like, Bradley, there's a problem. We need you to come help find our lost friend. He's like, I'll be right on it. I'm sober. And then the whole movie is just him doing his real
teetotaler.
Oh man, what a creep. He probably, I don't even want to, I don't want to get sued by Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, super chance you need to start playing. So hold on,
is it good? Do I hear Goodbye Stranger in the background?
Is it good? Oh yeah, it is. Hold on,
Goodbye Stranger. It's so nice.
Give me 1 second. This is hilarious.
Guys, this is the kind of thing that happens in Indiana. Oh my God. Rick, listen, you're hearing life happen. Let me tell you a story, listeners, while Nicole is fiddling with the CD player about Ben Affleck.
My dad was doing his taxes and he was just jamming out. And I guess it was like, but it's been silent for the last 10 minutes. I don't know why it just started playing.
Maybe your house has a ghost.
Who sings that song, Goodbye Stranger?
Supertramp.
That is Supertramp. Okay, yeah. My dad's a big Supertramp fan. He saw them in concert many times.
That's sick. I was listening. So my phone, as you know, and now you're all about to know, my phone mysteriously broke for no reason. I thought it was from the very tiny amount of water that splashed onto it.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't. I brought it into the shop. They're like, I don't know what's wrong with this thing, but it's fine now. So... while my phone is broken, I must say, have you taken like a phone detox, Nikki, at any point over the past couple recent memory times?
I always, is any time that it's possible for me to be away from my phone, I take that opportunity.
Okay. Well, I had been looking at my phone more than usual because in running the Zaza Lasagna pop-up that I did all winter, I had to like take orders on my phone. I had to do a lot of social media stuff, which was fun, but it was just like, kind of got to the point where I realized, whoa, I've been looking at my phone. And just as it ended, my phone broke. And so anyway, this all leads me to the point of my story, which is that yesterday when I drove out to Long Island, I listened to the radio for the first time in a long time. And Styx came on.
Oh, I love Styx. And
that song, Mr. Roboto, came on.
Well, it's a great song.
And it is the weird. I was just started laughing to myself. I was like, this is the weirdest song ever made. Truly,
genre is that? Is that like what? What is?
It's a great question. It's kind of like hair band music, but like a little less like gruff.
Domo Origato, Mr. Roboto. Yeah, I don't know.
It's
what
like,
year?
What
year?
You know what it is? Up? It's like Coke. It's like Cokey Yacht Rock.
I don't think it's Yacht Rock. Yacht Rock is a soft rock. So if but you're it, jamming it's, out,
and it's if you have more like, Coke. It's like, I mean, you do Coke, you do a bump, you do a couple of like fingernail or key bumps when you're listening to Hall & Oates on a yacht during the day. But then you put on Mr. Roboto and you break out like a long, long line that goes all the way down a dinner table. You're still on a yacht at this point.
Okay. I don't know. I feel like maybe.
Well, what do you think it is?
Night. Well, I'm the one who asked the question, so I definitely don't know. But
well, I can tell you something right now that I've seen Styx in concert.
I'm something of a yacht rock connoisseur, so.
Oh really? Excuse us all.
My credentials are that I read a long form article about in Rolling Stone about the yacht rock parody show that was in the 90s, and then I've created a playlist called Yacht Rocks. So. I'm pretty well knowledgeable about Yacht Rock.
I think okay? that you should make another playlist called Yacht Rocket.
By the way, that article in Rolling Stone is very good. Everyone should read it. It's if you have any interest at all in Yacht Rock.
If you love Yacht Rock as much as Nicole or Cokie Late Night Yacht Rock, like Styx and Journey, as much as I don't but think is funny, then read this article. Read this here article.
Journey. So you think of Styx and Journey as in the same category? I think of Journey I saw as them like together. Working class rock.
I saw them together at Jones Beach. I mean, if they weren't the same genre, why the hell else would have they been doing a show together?
That's a good question. Although, one time Jewel opened up for Ben Folds 5, and I saw that.
Oh dear Lord! Well, let me tell you something. So I saw this show. I don't know, the early 2000s. It was Styx and Journey. I feel like there was one other bad band in there.
And I like Journey.
Yeah, it's fine. They're fine. It was fun. I'm just saying they're not. They're no, I don't know. I'm trying to think of some other. They're no Weird Al Yankovic and his band. So I went to this show. I'm in my like early 20s. So I was doing coke. Maybe that's why I think of it as being affiliated with coke. Mrs. Miller, if you're listening.
Cocaine at a live concert?
Mrs. Miller, if you're listening, cover your ears. Yeah, of course. I did coke everywhere when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah. I never did it at a live... Well, that's not true, I guess. In a New York Brooklyn club is where you do all the coke. But I was just thinking... I was picturing it as an outdoor concert. For
it was. It was at Jones Beach Amphitheater. Oh. But I would do it. You know, I'd do it everywhere. There. Church. A synagogue. Yeah, we did pot. We did coke. We did everything. But look, here's
the point. You were just going for it. You were like on a proverbial yacht in the moment.
Exactly. Well, I was looking out at the yachts that were floating around in the harbor, and I was like, one day I'll be on that yacht. And I've never yet been on a yacht. And I blame Styx because they're not Yacht Rock. So anyway, I got home from the show, and in the foyer of my apartment building at the time, I came upon the unauthorized autobiography. Oh, wait, biography. Unauthorized biography of one Mr. John Z. DeLorean. It just happened to be, it was almost like a sign from God above that book of all books would be in my foyer for no reason. So being that I was still high on coke and I had some more coke, I took it and I read the whole thing from cover to cover.
On and cocaine?
Yes, that's the only way to read the unauthorized biography of John Z. DeLorean. You really understand his plight.
This must have been pre-bedbugs because I would never pick up a book in a lobby.
Yeah, this was in the 1700s.
This is pre the bedbug scare of 2008 in New York.
Exactly, yeah. The book was chiseled into stone. So anyway, that's a little bit about me and my youth. And I'm not proud of it, but I'm not proud of it. It happened.
Oh, Styx is great. I'm glad that you went to go see them in concert. I went to go see... So, for some reason, there's an outdoor concert theater, amphitheater? I don't really know what to call it. Here in Indiana. And it used to be called the Deer Creek Music Center of some kind. And now it's, like, the Verizon Wireless Center. Or, you know, they changed it to something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But one year, my friend Shannon, who has the same name as my sister Shannon, decided that we should just buy tickets for every single show that they were having there in the summertime, regardless of like what it was. We just bought like season tickets basically to the concerts at Deer Creek, and so we went to go see like Ben Folds Five, but also like Tom Petty, which, you know, this this is like the early 2000s, maybe even still like the late 99.
Wow, that's very sick. How was that?
I know, it was awesome. Everyone in that audience was old except for us, and everyone was doing so much pot, and
lighten up.
I did not do pot. I don't even think that we were drinking. I just picture us as like these wholesome dorks, like sitting outdoors on a blanket watching Tom Petty. Like, maybe we were drinking, but like,
it's just, you're like probably the two of eating us. Cool Ranch Doritos. That I can almost confirm for sure.
I just like, we probably were smoking. I mean, she smoked pot, so I probably was like trying to pretend to smoke pot along with her. But I just think it's really funny that we did that. The two of us, we went to every concert that they had there that year. Also, that must have been so expensive.
It must have. How did you afford it? Did you have a genie in a bottle or something?
I remember. I mean, I had worked always. And at some point in between, like, going to community college, in between high school and community college, I got two jobs where I was working, like, one daytime job and one overnight Denny's shift. So I was thinking about this the other day. I've had in my lifetime multiple periods where I've had two jobs. I guess it's just my thing.
Right.
So I could have had a ton of money because I was still living at home and I was working two jobs and apparently never sleeping because I'm working overnights at Denny's.
Burning the midnight oil.
And then also working my day job. And then I guess it was summer, so I wasn't going to college. Right. So I guess I was loaded. Who knows?
You were very rich. You had box seats to see Tom Petty. Box picnic blanket seats.
Wait, but I do want to tell you a story from my current life.
Please.
That this happened to me, and I'm like, oh, I should tell this on the podcast. Hopefully it's interesting. I just cracked myself up earlier this week. I was just driving around, which is what I do because I don't have a job yet. And so I went to like the southern side of Indiana. So I ended up like down near Martinsville, for Kelly, the only Indiana person listening to this. I was near Martinsville, but I was taking...
beautiful this time of year, Martinsville, isn't it?
I was taking, like, a state road. I wasn't on the highway. And I was trying to find a thrift store that wasn't, like, a Goodwill, which is really difficult in Indiana. Most of them are Goodwills.
Okay.
At this point. And so I saw a restored, like, VW van on the highway ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And I, like, convinced myself that these were, like, young kids that knew where the thrift store was, that I should just follow them. And wherever they ended up, I would be, Nicole, like, in a cool town. I mean, we're on, like, a big highway with a bunch of cars. Like, there are several cars in between me and the van. And so, I, like, I mean, they're
you just thought they were going to the thrift store?
Well, I was, like, I started following, like, 30 different vintage sellers on Instagram since I've been trapped in my parents' house during COVID. And they're all always going on picking trips. So
right.
They're always just like getting in their van and driving around and being like, we're not going to tell you where we're going because it's, you know, purveyor secrets.
Right.
And I was like, somehow I'm so like lonely and insane here. I was just like, that cute restored Volkswagen van is definitely going to like a secret thrift store in or near Martinsville. And I'm going to follow them and find out where it is. So I did follow them, but they stayed on the main highway the entire time. So it was like, not stalkery, but eventually they did get off of the road, and I pulled off the road, and I had to go around the block because they pulled off before I could see them. And I had to go around the block, and I go around the block, and the person who gets out of this van is like an ancient 90-year-old man. And
he's did you like just... take his perfect Levi's off of him? Give me those Levi's. I knew you'd have something cool.
Pulled up in front of his house because he just lives in Martinsville. So he pulled up in front of his house, got out of his van, and started talking to some other ancient man that just happened to be walking down the street. And I was like, damn it.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. That's amazing.
But I love that I just made up this entire scenario in my mind based on the fact that there was, but I'm like, of course, a perfectly restored like Volkswagen van could only belong to somebody old. Like, there just aren't people. I mean, they're around, probably more in California than Indiana. But, like, it's just the chances that it's, like, somebody hip and cool.
Yeah, and they're low.
Their store is
They're very low.
It was a very weird connection for me to make. But you know, now I know where that guy lives.
thank God. You know what would have been funny? If a couple of things. One is if you had rolled down your window and gone up to him and be like, I've been following you, and tried to explain this story to him.
No, he would not have been able to hear me.
Right. And you guys start like a sitcom between the two of you about like an elderly man and a wacky lady who become best friends because she tried to follow him to the thrift store.
Uh-huh. And there's no threat of sexual attention because we're both middle-aged or 90. And so the audience will be on their seats. Will they or won't they? Die.
Oh, God. Holy shit. All right. Should we get into today's topic?
Yeah. I also wanted to distract you with that story because my research is not as robust as I would like it to be. So I don't have a ton to say. But
that's perfect because I do have a lot to say. And my research, my story ended up taking a serious turn.
Oh, no.
But in a good way. I think we're going to like it. Okay. It already tells me much better than yours. I'm just kidding.
So we decided to do coffee.
Coffee, I realize we've done it before, but we're taking a very different angle. Not me and you, Bretton and I, and Dana Cowan.
Oh, well, yes. Coffee part two.
Mm-hmm. The second, a free refill.
And so I decided to do coffee enemas because I think that's what everybody's thinking about nowadays.
Yeah. Have you ever done one?
No.
Have you ever done any enema?
No, I don't. No, I've never done, so, like, a colonic is, like, also kind of like an enema, right? Where they shove water. Yeah. No,
I've never done that. It's the same thing. It's just that they give you, I went to go get a colonic one time, and I accidentally made the appointment in Minneapolis, Minnesota. For some reason, I Googled,
instead of,
like,
New York?
And I was in New York, and I, like, called a colonic place, and they're like, just confirming your appointment for tomorrow. It's on, like, South Bear Town Road or something. And I was just like, what? What are you talking about? Where is that? Downtown? What is that? In the financial? FIDI? They're like, huh? I was like, where is this place? They're like, Minneapolis. And I was like, maybe I'm not supposed to get an enema today. But I did. I went to Minneapolis. Just kidding.
Oh, my God. This could only happen to you.
Truth.
So you never had one then, is what you're trying to
say. I did. I had one. I went to a place in New York, like, the following day.
Did you see all your poop chunks come out?
No, I didn't look. I didn't look at it. I felt it. And I have an enema kit at my home.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really good.
I haven't done it yet, but I bought one because it was recommended to me by a friend who's one of my best friends who's an herbalist. And she's like, you really should start doing this. Because it's supposed to be like, well, I don't want to ruin your research, but it's supposed to be really good for you. Not necessarily with coffee, but with just water.
Well, my research is the opposite of that. So,
oh, well, I'm glad that I have. Yeah, it's a bucket. It's under my bathroom sink. I'm so sorry, Mrs. Miller, if you're still listening. Now, not only do you know that I've done cocaine, but also that I am planning to give myself an enema at some point.
Okay. So we have been, as a human race, have been doing enemas in one way or another since the old ancient times. So at some point, they thought that it would get rid of demons if they were in you. They were also used to administer hallucinogenics for rituals.
Ooh, I like that.
In the ancient times. So they've been around. So, you know, that lends itself to the idea that, you know, maybe they're not all that bad if they were doing it in the ancient times, but who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, Western science, who can trust anybody really these days? So I'm just going to fast forward to when coffee enemas started getting really popular here in the United States, because that's all I care about.
Yes, the good old U.S. American Enema Foundation.
From the 1930s. So they were around. This isn't official. I read some very unreliable website that said that the reason why we do coffee enemas is because in World War II, there were so many injured men that the doctors were working on that they had to drink coffee to stay up for 24 hours or more. And Sometimes the men were constipated from the morphine, and so the nurses would give them water enemas to help them out with that. And so the nurses decided, well, why waste all this extra coffee that the doctors are drinking? So I'm going to toss one into one of the patients. And I, as I was reading this, I was like, I don't think this is
based on science. Cup and all? I'm just kidding.
So I think this person just made up a story about coffee enemas and published it on a website. Which
the origin story.
God bless you. I love that it had to be in World War II.
I know. I wish, though, that that was more of an origin story of, like, how, like, the chocolate chip cookie origin story myth, like, and then the chips just accidentally fell into the cookie dough. Like,
I just love the idea, like, of a nurse, like, looking over at the coffee, which I guess is just brewing where all the men are laying in their beds. And she's like, let's don't waste this coffee. Let's stick it up their butts.
I like to think that it fell in by accident. Or it was like a big mix up, like, and then she reached for a glass of water, but really it was blazing hot coffee.
A glass of water. So I got most of this information from a different, potentially more reliable website called theatlantic.com. Mm-hmm. And they say that in the 1930s, Dr. Dr. Max Gerson, who is actually kind of well known, came up with something called Gerson's therapy, or Gerson if you're French.
J'excuse. Oui, oui.
But his whole deal was that he thought that you could combat cancer by being vegetarian, drinking hourly glasses of organic juice, and doing coffee enemas. So this therapy is still popular today, even though they have actually done scientific studies, and none of the studies have ever shown that anyone has prevented or reduced their cancer from this
Coffee enema.
Well, from drinking raw juice, being vegetarian, and also coffee enemas. So essentially what the FDA says is that, you know, there is no, like, toxin that is associated with cancer specifically. So, like, detoxing in general is not gonna help the cancer in this specific way, allegedly.
Well, I think it just has a lot to do, and this is for a more boring episode, but I believe, and we'll have to get an expert on here, Dr. Gerson, please call into the show. It's just, like, the more toxins that are in your body help to, like, break down the walls of the cells that we need to stay healthy so that cancer doesn't form. That is my understanding of toxins.
Basically, they rigorously have tried to study his particular approach, and it has resulted in zero cancer prevention.
But who is they? Dr. Fauci? We can't trust him.
No, not Dr. Fauci. The scientists.
The only doctor I know. Him and Dr. Quinn.
They did some controlled and some random studies.
Yeah.
I don't know. Drinking raw juice isn't going to prevent your cancer. There's actually a whole other podcast we could do about that that woman who said she was pushing this kind of similar lifestyle.
The moon juice lady?
No, this woman said that she had cancer and that she was cured of it because she drank raw juice only and, like, did all these supplements that she tried to get other people to buy, and it turned out that she did not have cancer at all.
Oh, let's do that.
People with real cancer believed her, and
oh, that's terrible. We should definitely do that as an episode. I drink raw juice every day, but it's not to prevent cancer. It's delicious, and I feel like it's good for me, but I don't know. When I say, like, good for me, I don't really, like, necessarily think, like, it's going to, I'm not thinking specifically about cancer.
Do whatever you want to do. I'm just telling you what these Western doctors say, and we all know that we can't trust the Western doctors, but I have a healthy skepticism about you needing to clean out your own bowels and the fact that your body can do it itself.
Right. Your body is set up to clean out your bowels for you.
It is a wonderland, your body.
But what our bodies aren't set up for, I will counter with, is all the stuff that we eat that's unnatural that there doesn't that they bleh, that our bodies don't necessarily know how to process, right? And even like stuff that's like in our water at this point that like isn't meant to be there, and all this other stuff that I think that would be my only argument for why we might need to have, you know, a little extra help in that area.
Sure. Listen, home enemas aren't that bad for you. You don't want to use them to excess because it actually does dehydrate you, but it's fine.
I'm doing one right now. Imagine. For this episode, I decided I would do an enema live on the air.
So your voice sounds the same when you're lying down as when you're sitting up. That's not what it sounds like.
It live from the enema.
Okay. So anyway, the reasoning that a coffee enema is good for you is that it stimulates your glutathione S-transferase system by 700%.
So, oh my god.
That sounds good. It also cleans, great. It takes your blood and it cleans it right out. That's what this Dr. Gorsone says.
Are you sick and tired of filthy, dirty blood?
Dirty, disgusting blood. Get it clean. But it's also interesting, this article points out that they invented the coffee enema, or at least like this line of health food thinking did, because they were like, well, it's not possible for a human being to reasonably ingest a liter of coffee. Mm. But that was in 1930. But like now, this article points out that a Trenta at Starbucks is 33 ounces. So a liter is, or sorry, a liter is 33 ounces, and a Trenta of coffee from Starbucks is 30 ounces. So nowadays, humans do drink way too much coffee. So you could just drink that much coffee, a liter's worth, and not have to put it in your butt.
Yeah, it's easier to put in your mouth than it is in your butt. Unless, like, well, we're going to go over my story, it's blazing lava hot.
But also, if you have a sensitive stomach, you know, maybe having it absorbed through your butthole is easier than having it on your sensitive stomach lining, you know?
It's a shame there's only two holes. I wish, if I had a fourth wish, I would wish for more holes.
Yeah. That sounds like a porn. So the FDA has been very outspoken against enemas. There's also a very small chance that you can pop your colon like a balloon.
Oh, good Lord. Ugh, the thought of it. The thought of it is too much.
In 1980, the Journal of American Medical Association reported that two people had died from coffee enemas.
Oh, what a way to go. What a like ridiculous way to die. Can you imagine? What a horrible, it's a good stupid thing. This way to die.
The internet, because people on Instagram were always like, how did he die? And the family always has to respond. But now, in 1980, that wasn't an issue. You'd be like, he's dead. If you didn't see his obituary in the newspaper, you're out of luck.
That's true. They're just like, the guy's like, I thought Trente was medium. Just puts like a Trente up his butt.
It's Trenta. Okay. Also, one time I had to drink a Trenta because it was right after they came out, and the Starbucks that I went to was like, we're out of the venti, which is like the 20 ounce large. You simply must have a Trenta instead, and no extra charge. And oh, I was wow. like, okay, fine. And so I got 33 ounces of iced tea.
Wow, that's so much.
A lot. Yeah. I don't even know if I drank it all. Who knows? Let's see. Oh, okay. So there is an episode of My Strange Addiction. Remember that show?
Yes. Where they eat couches and stuff?
This couple was addicted to coffee enemas. Oh, wow. And this woman said that they typically did it up to 4 times a day, but she had at some point in her life done it 10 times in one day.
That's the whole day. That's the whole day. You finish one, you start another one. Who has that kind of time?
They pointed out in the article that they work from home, so it's easier for them to do coffee enemas all day long.
Dear Jonathan, I hope this email finds you well. I'm currently shoving coffee into my asshole. Can you imagine? People could be doing anything writing emails now.
Yeah, well, this is before Zoom, you know? It was a different time. We lived our lives in a different way, although they did decide to go on television.
Also, I'm assuming they didn't sleep, because if they're all that caffeine, they probably had 24 full hours to do enemas. Right.
They were also on a yacht, but they were having a different experience.
And that is who formed the band Styx.
They said that 10 times a day or 4 times a day is the equivalent of 33 cans of Red Bull in terms of the caffeine that you're ingesting.
I'm horrified.
Yeah, it's a lot. And then they were like, well, humans can tolerate a lot of caffeine, but most people go to the hospital for smaller amounts. So they basically were talking about because of the increase in the popularity of energy drinks, there have been lots more hospitalizations. And we talked about this when we did the Monster
right.
drink episode. But so there have just been a lot of people being hospitalized because of too much caffeine since energy drinks have come on the thing. But they also said that there's a type of therapy for depression where they try to induce a seizure by giving you caffeine intravenously. And so they give you 2,000 milligrams intravenously, and that's supposed to induce a seizure, which will then, I guess,
make you happy.
Depression. I'd happy. Rather have electroshock therapy, I think.
It's like, aren't you happy that you're not having a seizure anymore?
Are you tired of having seizures or not having seizures? So to date, there's no scientific evidence that says that enemas are good or that they help you or that they are a good way. I mean, they will administer caffeine, but that it's a good way. It's also possible that there's a lot of fear mongering around it on the web, but they're like, it dehydrates you. It could have caused an increased likelihood of you contracting HIV.
What? Why?
Because flooding your colon with water actually dehydrates it, and so supposedly
it wants to absorb like more sperm.
Supposedly, but also it's like
sounds kind of like anti-gay.
They're also saying that like it could be more. It makes it irritated, so it's more likely to, you know, if the skin is irritated. I don't know. I was just like, this just sounds like fear mongering to me.
It does, yeah.
Because plenty of people, you know, do that. And yeah. It seems fine. So, yeah, coffee enemas.
Well, if you're going to have anal sex, too, it's, like, a good thing to give yourself an enema, I think. I mean, from all the anal sex that I've been having all pandemic long, that's why I got the enema. No, I just, you know, I know that from people who have a lot of anal sex. They say that they do enemas a lot. And that makes
sense
people,
yeah,
to me.
Some people do. I mean, some people also are just like, that's where poop comes from, so you know, get used to it. So it depends on what you're into. But yeah, I think that in that way, I also know people that regularly give themselves enemas and are happy, healthy, and thriving.
Thriving with enema and leaking. I wonder. I guess we'll find out when I finish this enema at the end of the episode. That was riveting content. Very well told. I disagree that it wasn't a fleshed out story. I think it was amazing. And I love it. And we're going to take a quick break. And I'm fingies and toes crossed that this show is going to either be brought to us today by coffee or enemas. Or both.
This episode is brought to you by Tuk Tuk Box, a Southeast Asian woman-founded company with a mission to share Southeast Asian culture and experiences through food. They offer curated subscription boxes and products, partnering with vetted small business owners and local farmers from Southeast Asian communities. Their signature Southeast Snack Box is available in 3 funky levels, perfect for all palates. You can either purchase a one-time box or sign up for a monthly subscription. Tuk Tuk Box is sharing Southeast Asian stories at your doorstep. Get your first box at tuktukbox.com. That's tuktukbox.com.
And Nicole, it happens that we are back. We're back from break.
Welcome.
Guys, was the show brought to you by Big Enema? We'll never know.
We'll never know. I hope it was brought to us by Supertramp.
Oh, yeah, that would also be extremely appropriate. Okay, so I'm going to do a story today about something. Now, how I came to doing this story is very interesting. So I go to East One Coffee for my coffee pretty much every morning on the corner of Court and Carroll. And all of the baristas and baristos, is it just one barista, baristo? It's just barista, right?
I think it's just barista.
Oh, all the priests that, all the priest bros that work there are super nice, and I always order an extra hot latte. I've been doing that this winter. It's a new vibe I'm trying out. I like it for myself. I'm gonna have to wane off of it soon as it's gonna be inappropriate temperature wise. But I'm getting all the ones in that I possibly
extra
can.
Extra hot latte? Wow.
After my run, I like to stop by and get a coffee, and I'm not really like, I don't eat very much in the morning. So after a big long run, it feels like a little bit of, you know, calories. And I'm also concerned about osteoporosis. So I'm trying to chug all that milk.
Well, you know, milk's not the best way to absorb calcium, but,
I prefer it to eating clay. So anyway,
but why extra hot? They tend to be hot when you get them, don't they?
No, to me, they don't. Now, first of all, I like things extreme, like much like my hero Dan Cortez from, just kidding. I like things extreme. No, seriously, like I like really cold things. I like really hot food. Like I don't like a tepid anything. I don't like a tepid latte. It doesn't do it for me. It just feels like a letdown. And also I chug things at a rapid pace. So if it's not really hot, I'm going to drink it in like under 30 seconds. And then my one treat of the day is like over in 30 seconds. So I want it to last at least a minute and a half.
I feel like they're scalding the milk to make it like 140 degrees for you.
Well, whatever's happening, it's working for me. So
is it non-dairy milk or using?
No, regular milk. I'm not into non-dairy milk anymore. I experimented with it. It's ultimately not for me. So. Yeah. This all brings me to my point is that I walked in the other day and I was like, just randomly, I was like, can I get a latte? And I was just so tired of my dumb, boring, like Carroll Garden self being like, can I get an extra hot latte? And I was like, can I get a latte lawsuit hot, please?
You said that?
Yes. And we all had we laughed and laughed about it. And one of the baristas there was like, hey, do you actually know the real story about that? About that McDonald's lawsuit, coffee lawsuit. I was like, I don't actually.
Oh, you don't? I thought we talked about it on the show.
No, I don't know the real story about it. And if we talked about it, I blanked it out of my memory. There's
also a really great podcast about it on a different podcast.
Which okay, podcast? Is it You're Wrong About?
Maybe.
Because this really seems like a You're Wrong About episode, but I just couldn't find it on their feed. Anyway,
so. No, I don't think it's
that. Just knew it from like something that happened in the early 90s. There's tons of parodies about it growing up. Like it's been a cultural kind of in the zeitgeist and a reference like for as long as I can remember. But I never really knew the real story. I knew the Seinfeld episode in which like they parody it and like Kramer spills hot coffee on himself in the movie theater. Then Jackie Childs like tries to sue the company and he settles for free coffee for life. And it's hilarious. But the real story is fucking awful. And
very awful.
It's really awful. It's a bit of an Aaron Brockovich situation here. And it's actually, I did a bigger deep dive after watching this documentary film that was made about called Hot Coffee, which then expanded into it going literally all the way to the very top. So I'm about to present to you the story of Blazing Hot Coffee. I got most of my information from a very interesting documentary called Hot Coffee, and it is a documentary film made by Susan Saladoff. It came out in 2011. I highly recommend you watch it. It's really, really, really sad and really very informative and very interesting. I also got information from an article from Vox by Herman Lopez, and it is called What a Lot of People Get Wrong About the Infamous 1994 McDonald's Coffee Lawsuit. So, according to the National Coffee Association, your favorite association, which many large companies in the food and beverage industry listen to, coffee should be served at around 180 to 185 degrees. That's fucking extremely hot.
It sure is.
It's really hot. Now, the temperature of boiling water is 212 degrees, unless you're in a high altitude place where water will boil at around 202 degrees.
Whoa.
It's really hot. Like, if you're in Denver, the water boils at 202. Weird. Science. Weird science. Weird science. That funky, funky science.
So for them, the saying, a watched pot never boils, is not true. It's
very different. A watched pot boils quicker when you're here in Denver. That's their town motto. Okay. So 155-degree water can burn you with... give you a first-degree burn if it's on your skin for 5 seconds. That's 155 degrees. Your bath water is like 104 degrees. If you take like a pretty hot bath, it's 104. So 180 degrees is the recommended temperature for coffee. It seems really hot to me. The year is 1992. A 79-year-old adorable woman named Stella Liebeck. She couldn't be any cuter or like littler or more of a grandma. And her grandson stop at McDonald's in Albuquerque, New Mexico on their way back from dropping off a family member at the airport. They park the car. She gets a coffee and some food. She puts it in between her knees so that she can put cream and sugar into it. And as she's doing that, it spills into her lap and she is horrifically burned.
Horrifically burnt. Her skin peeling off.
Peeling off all over her. She burns her vagina nearly off. And I honestly think that part of the reason that this story doesn't get more like got. So, well, I mean, we'll find out in a minute why it was so terribly bastardized, but I honestly think that the reporting because didn't want to say that a woman, they didn't want to say vagina. They didn't want to talk about a 79-year-old woman's vagina, but that's what happened. She burned her vagina and her inner thighs quite badly.
Very bad. Also, they had to do like skin grafts, and that I never, until I listened to this podcast, which I looked it up. It's the Swindled podcast, which
I love. Oh, yes. Good podcast.
But I had no idea, you know, and I grew up hearing that story. I'm like, older, so that I was like old enough to hear all the jokes about it, and it's also one of those cautionary tales about like people are gonna sue you for no you know like one of those right. things.
Well, we're gonna get into that in a moment. That's where I'm taking okay. us.
Great.
But so Liebeck acknowledged that the spill was her fault. What she took issue with was that the coffee was so hot. It was at 190 degrees. That's near boiling, and. McDonald's apparently knew that the coffee was this safe because over the previous decade, McDonald's had received 700 reports of people burning themselves from their coffee. McDonald's admits that the coffee was a hazard at such a high temperature, but continued the practice enforced by the official McDonald's, by the higher-ups, of heating its coffee to near boiling.
Right, because they knew... Did you hear about... I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
They knew that it would be cheaper for them to settle the lawsuits than to actually...
Change the policy. The exactly.
Yeah.
McDonald's claims that customers wanted their coffee this hot. Like, I mean, but they're still making, well, I'll tell you that in a minute, but this is like industry standard still. Liebeck didn't want to go to court. She just wanted McDonald's to pay her medical expenses, estimated at $20,000. McDonald's offered $800, leading her to file a lawsuit 2 years later in 1994. After hearing the evidence, the jury concluded that McDonald's handling of its coffee was so irresponsible that Liebeck should get more than the $20,000, suggesting almost $3 million to send the company a message. Liebeck settled for less than a little over $600,000, and McDonald's began changing temporarily how it heated up its coffee. Now, the horrible thing about this is that this old woman who had her vagina burned off has been maligned for the past, like, three decades as some kind of, like, greedy, money-hungry shithead who we all need to be careful of. Even I thought that. And I'm not somebody who tends to, like, not believe the little guy and favor McDonald's, but there's something that's so ingrained in our brains about this specific thing as the like trope of dishonesty, and it so goes against what like who cares. I mean, I'm going to talk about this later, but who cares even if people are lying? Why do we care so much if working class people get money from McDonald's? You know what I mean?
Seriously, like McDonald's can afford it.
Right. So I ask you this question, Nicole. How do you think the public's view of this case got so warped? I bet you're not going to even begin to guess who the fuck is responsible for this. But when I tell you, it's going to make perfect sense. But I'll tell you in a minute.
Is it Bill Clinton?
No, actually, Bill Clinton is vehemently against what we're about to talk about and vetoed all kinds of legislation trying to put caps on lawsuit. But that doesn't make him a good guy. But anyway, so according to Conover, lawyers spent years running a disinformation campaign, which much of the media bought into, holding up the McDonald's coffee lawsuit as an example of a supposed epidemic in frivolous lawsuits. The last several decades, large corporations, afraid of being sued for making unsafe products, created front groups like Citizens Against Lawsuits Abuse, like different citizen action, you know, committees, to turn public opinion against lawsuits. University of Washington professor Michael McCann told Conover. But the best social science evidence shows that the number of personal injury lawsuits in recent decades has declined, and the median payout is only about $55,000. So, like, we, you know what I mean? Like, we think that, like, people are going around suing and getting hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's just so odd that even, like, I'm just really thinking about myself. Like, I don't think like this. Like, I don't feel like people shouldn't get money. But if for some reason, in the back of my mind, I don't think about this that much to begin with, but if I did, you know what I mean? There's some part of me that is like, oh, people with frivolous lawsuits, like, it's just, it's deeply ingrained. So.
Well, I think also as a small business owner that comes to play.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Now, these lawsuits are called tort lawsuits. And tort lawsuits are basically known to the public as frivolous lawsuits. The definition of tort is a wrongful act or an infringement of a right other than under contract, leading to a civil legal liability. And this is where we enter the master of tort reform, which is a very bad thing. Tort reform is terrible. It is, as we will learn, is the goal is to cap or completely negate the public's ability to recoup money for damages if you have been hurt by a corporation or, you know, whatever. So enter Karl Rove. Nicole, are you familiar with Karl Rove? I'm sure you are.
Yes.
Okay. Public, if you don't know who Karl Rove is, he is perhaps the biggest monster known today to American, one of the biggest monsters in American history and responsible for all the hits like the Iraq War and tort reform. But so anyway, Karl Christian Rove was born on December 25th, 1950. And he is an American Republican political consultant, policy advisor, and lobbyist. He was most famously the senior advisor and deputy chief of staff during George W. Bush administration until he resigned in 2007. So, are you still with me?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this kind of, it's riveting. It gets even more riveting. So Karl Rove basically began his career as a political consultant and professional creep in the late 1960s, early 1970s. By the late 1980s, he begins collaborating with a guy named Bob Perry, who is a major political donor in Texas. He was like a house builder, and he's one of the people, I think he's donated the most money to Texas political campaigns of anyone in history. He's now dead, but in his time. So their goal was to fund various Republican candidates and provide fake issues to be used in political campaigns. And using these tactics, they little by little patiently expanded the Republican power in Texas. So before this, there was not to say that these people are better, but there was a lot of like Dixiecrats and stuff all over the South, which were just Democrats, racist, horrible Democrats with a liberal agenda, but it was more democratic. Not that that's good or bad necessarily, but that's what it was.
They're
both bad. Both options are bad, and that is actually the problem. And that is the point of the story. We can't trust anyone! Bernie 2020. Okay. In the Golden Triangle of Beaumont, area of Texas, you have a lot, this is kind of an explanation for like where all of these kind of lawsuits started popping up and why Karl Rove became interested. You have a lot of plants that made asbestos and other things that used a lot of chemicals and oil refinery. And so the cases from people who would get sick from like asbestos plants and such would come to the Supreme Court. And somebody who, let's say, would work for an oil refinery down in Corpus Christi, or somebody gets hurt, claims long-term poisoning, and a big case, your typical tort case looks kind of like something like this. So a worker from the company would be poisoned and claiming he was poisoned, and then he would sue the company. And the trial lawyers and the tort lawyers would come with this guy, and the corporate defense lawyers would, you know, take the side of the major company that was being sued. And this would go through the various higher and lower courts until they reached the Supreme Court in Texas. So let's say the Supreme Court sided with the little guy all the time, which they did in the up until the late 80s. It became, in effect, a plaintiff's court. And the Supreme Court in Texas was ruling almost every time in favor of the plaintiff. The effect of this is that you get higher malpractice rates for doctors' insurance costs rise, and some people perceive it as an ill to society to have too many verdicts in favor of the plaintiff, particularly Republicans. Well, it's only an ill to society
if you don't have Medicare for all.
Exactly. If there was Medicare for all, none of this would happen. That's the point. The people who see it as an ill to society are people who do not support Medicare, which are Democrats and Republicans.
Yes.
Republicans are lobbied, but it's pretty much all Republicans and some Democrats. Republicans are lobbied by big companies like Philip Morris, who also Karl Rove consulted for, and the big companies, insurance companies, don't want to pay. So in layman's terms, really just like they see all these tort lawsuits happening, and so then they begin to like lobby and run Supreme Court candidates to end tort lawsuits because it's costing their clients like a lot of money. It's costing big companies money.
That much money. It's just so crazy to think that like the whole rationale is that like if someone rightfully sues somebody for malpractice, then they get rightfully some money. Then yeah. The insurance companies then react by saying, "Well, it's going to cost more money, guys." Like that, the whole system is just like messed up.
It's terrible. Instead of being like, "Oh, you're running a company that's killing people. You're making coffee that's burning people when they drink it. Like, how about let's enforce some regulation?" You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and we don't even need punishment. To get into like all of the companies that have like repeatedly killed and poisoned their workers by using crazy chemicals. Like, those people. Anyway, I'm preaching
no,
the
but
choir
of, here. But of course, no. But like the thing is, it's just so fucked up because it's part of this whole vicious cycle because they don't want to punish them because they're making money off of it too. Yes. And then enters the whole thing where they're like, now Karl Rove is in here, you know, doing campaigns for Supreme Court justices in Texas, and he flips the entire state. So like basically every Supreme Court justice is a Republican that is, who wants tort reform. They've made it this huge thing. Instead of looking at real issues or how to actually solve the problem, they're just looking at how to save corporations money and then convincing the citizens that it's a problem. So then they're creating citizen action groups and creating propaganda to make it seem like frivolous lawsuits are hugely problematic when they're not at all. And convincing voters on bills to like put caps on personal injury cases because they've distorted this. I mean, it didn't start with the McDonald's case, but the McDonald's coffee case was huge in like propagandizing this entire thing to make people think that they need to vote on bills to vote against their own rights. Like in this movie, in this documentary, there's this one, they briefly mention a guy who gets like horribly hurt and then he's like, "Well, I want to sue." And they're like, "Well, you vote." They asked him if he had voted on this bill that had recently passed for tort reform. He's like, "Yeah, but that's for people who have like crazy lawsuits." So there's this whole idea that like people are just out there and doing like, it takes a lot to go to court, first of all.
Yeah, it takes a long time.
And it takes a long time. And also lawyers, as much as like we're like taught to think that there's this trope of the trial lawyer, and I'm not saying that doesn't exist, but that just wants to like chase an ambulance and most lawyers are not going to waste their time. I shouldn't say most. A lot of lawyers are not going to waste their time with a case that has no legs. So if they're taking the case, it has a good chance that there's a reason, you know?
Yeah.
It's insane. Anyway, so tort reform was one of the biggest issues for, you guessed it, George W. Bush, America's now, I guess, favorite adorable president, who's really just like such a monster. If anyone has a question about like why we don't like the Obamas. Look no further. And I shouldn't say, I don't want to say I don't fully don't like the Obamas, but I haven't, I definitely have issues with the Obamas. I'll just say.
Oh, I would, I think I don't like them.
I know that you fully don't like them. I just like, I'm sorry, but like watching Michelle Obama cuddle with George Bush is like disgusting. It's really a fucking he's so problem. Because he's so ugly.
Yeah.
It's just a fucking problem. It's like, don't forget, just because he's like not as triggering and just like publicly disgusting and uncouth as Donald Trump, that he's not a horrible person, a warmonger to the nth degree, a pig, an idiot, definitely a Styx fan. So definitely on a yacht doing coke. But anyway, I digress. But so one of the biggest issues of the George W. Bush campaign that he was pushing was tort reform. Continued the false promises to voters that he had been doing in Texas for years. He had been running on that when he ran for governor. And that capped or eliminated settlements, that capping or eliminating settlements would decrease healthcare costs and improve the kind of healthcare system that we had. Obviously, this never happened. And for some odd reason, he would mention OBGYNs every single time that he gave this speech. It was like, and OBGYNs can't do their job on vaginas.
You know what? OBGYNs should talk about how, why in this developed country, so many women die of childbirth.
Absolutely. That's a great question. But so a lot of, I mean, look, there is some issues. I know this from people that are good doctors and good people, that there are issues with being sued that make it really difficult to sometimes give the care that you, I think that's the other side of this coin that we need to look at, for the, you know, good doctors that are out there, that like sometimes they want to give you a certain kind of care and there's so much red tape, and fear of being sued that sometimes they just don't. I don't know how often that happens. I just know it's an issue that I've heard raised by someone that I know that actually is an OBGYN who's a friend of the family. But anyway, so Citizens Against Lawsuit Abuse Groups linked to the national network funded by major tobacco and corporate money. Mm-hmm. Okay. The CALA, which is Citizens Against Lawsuits for Abuse Blueprint, was honored and was honed in South Texas in the early 1990s. Texas Governor George W. Bush, who raised more than $4 million in gubernatorial races from Texas tort reform groups, has been one of the Texas CALA's most prominent champion. A principal focus of CALA groups since the mid-1990s has been to ensure the election of pro-industry state judges and defeat judges who typically support plaintiff verdicts or have voted to strike down state tort law restrictions as unconstitutional. So it's all going in a circle, right? It's the same people like who are working for the tobacco companies that don't, you know what I mean, who are like Karl Rove worked for Philip Morris and is into tort reform because guess who's probably getting sued all the time for killing people with their cigarettes.
It's also just funny that it's called the Citizens for whatever, but it's backed by corporations.
Yeah, and it's against the citizens. It's fucking insane. There's been a shift towards signing aberration clauses, which for arbitration clauses. So this is another part of this movie, which is very interesting. So now a lot of companies within the past couple of decades, like Halib, there's just one horrible story about a woman who joined the army and went to work for Halliburton and was raped, and she had signed an arbitration clause and she tried to sue Halliburton. And arbitration is terrible. You are signing away your right to sue and only use an arbitrator, and the arbitrators are essentially always working for the corporations.
Yeah. Halliburton, a whole other great Bush era company.
Oh, good old this show hopefully is brought to you by Halliburton.
I hope so.
On here on the Heritage Radio. In all fairness, trialers are huge lobbyists and donors to the Democratic Party. Well, I mentioned that Bill Clinton and Barack Obama have both been very anti-tort reform. And I also tried to look into see if Biden and Harris had some secret tort reform allegiances. They do not. They are both very much against tort reform as well. That doesn't mean I like them. It just means that they are not tort reformist. At least they are not publicly, although I'm sure if it's lining their pockets, they'll tort with the best of them.
Absolutely. They'll reform every tort they see.
Yeah. Hey, is that a tort? Looks like you need a little reform. You know what's funny? I've been rewatching The Sopranos, and right after I did my research for this the other day, I put on an episode about, it's the best episode, I think, of The Sopranos, and maybe of any show ever made. It's called Whitecaps, and I think it's the season 4 finale. And Tony goes to buy this house down the shore, and the lawyer gets, like, this guy is going to buy it from, gets on the phone, and he's like, don't worry, like, I'm going to kill him with tort. Like, I'm going to take him to, like, for a tort case or something. And I've never heard it before. And then all of a sudden I hear it. And it's, like, very weird. Okay, I have just a little bit more to go, Amanda. I'm sorry. I know we're going over, but this, everyone's on the edge of their seat. Yes. This is essentially why we need campaign finance reform. Both sides are playing games with our lives. This is written by me. Both sides are playing games with our lives to line their pockets. Okay, so I personally think that this all boils down to campaign finance reform. If, you know, corporations weren't allowed to donate these massive amounts of money and lobby people in the way they do, we wouldn't have this kind of thing happening in the first place. And then I wrote in all caps, they cheat, but they don't want poor working class folks to get to do the same thing. Who cares if someone gets too much money from fucking Pfizer? Which is just like, to me, I'm like, all these people do. I mean, I'm speaking about the Republicans now. They're notorious cheaters, but they're all cheaters. Is just try to find ways to stay rich and cheat the system. I mean, what is the stock market? What is everything that these people do? And the minute they see working class or poor or people of color trying to get a little, even if it is cheating, they're like, no, not you. You can't. That's cheating. It's like, right. Fuck you. You know what I mean?
They don't pay any taxes. They don't do anything to give back to the communities that they exploit. And also, they want to make sure that those people don't have any opportunity to take a couple of dollars from them.
It's ridiculous. It's the same thing with, like, the argument that, like, they were making during the pandemic, and they're talking about, well, some people might get $1,200 a week, and they don't even, you know, they don't need it. Blah, blah, blah. Like, whatever. And maybe they won't go to work. And Bernie Sanders was just like, who gives a shit if they get an extra fucking $1,200 a week? Who cares if a couple, like, people get extra money?
Also, like, what are you even talking about? $1,200 is, like, nothing. Like, it's not even enough to do anything.
It's ridiculous.
You can't even pay a month's rent with that.
So, and we just all need to remember is that these people who have such a fucking hairy eyeball on anybody getting something for free, on anyone getting, on people who need welfare, on that being too much, on that they're the ones who are like, well, not you. You couldn't possibly, look at your frivolous lawsuit. What happened? Your vagina was burned off? Well, go cry about it. You know what I mean? And it's funny because I just started this. I was like, I'm going to just do this as, like, a funny story, and it's so far from funny, and it's a reminder to myself as someone who thinks of myself as, like, you know, wanting to champion people in the working class and, like, pro working class, pro poor, you know, all of it, that even though that's where my head's at, I am still even susceptible to being, I don't know, propagandized towards believing this bullshit. So I think it's a pretty interesting story. And thank you for listening to me rant and rave.
It's been a while since we talked shit about the Obamas.
I know. Fuck you. Don't cuddle George Bush. And also, anyone who voted for the Iraq War in general should not be eligible to be president. So I want to just finish by telling you a little bit about the heroine of our story. Because this is how it all started. So Stella Liebach, this beautiful angel, remained in the hospital for 8 days while she underwent skin grafting. During this period, Liebach, who is already a small old lady, lost 20 pounds, nearly 20% of her body weight, reducing her to 83 pounds. After the hospital stay, Liebach needed care for 3 weeks, which was provided by her daughter. Liebach suffered because we don't even have the healthcare system to support an 80-year-old woman who's had her genitals burned off. She had to send them home. Liebach suffered permanent disfigurement after the incident, was partially disabled for 2 years. McDonald's still sells its coffee at this temperature. And I also just want to mention, as someone who has gotten a settlement from a lawsuit that, you know, there's no way to really quantify the pain and suffering that you endure through life. Like, mine is not terrible. Like, some people with medical malpractice and their children, in this documentary, these people, one of their two twins just lost air, and the OBGYN like didn't catch it, even though it was so preventable. And this kid has major issues now and can't live to the fullest ability that he could have if they didn't do that. And so there's no way to quantify. You can't put a number on that, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I will just say is, like, I didn't receive millions of dollars, but it was a really traumatic experience that, like, is baked into me. And I felt fortunate to be able to get a little bit of money to have a shot to do something else after that. And it doesn't heal it. Money is not, like, the thing that heals anything. But, you know, what else can we offer people who go through bad experiences at the hand of somebody else and someone else's, you know, mistakes and fuck ups and intentional damaging? So that's it. That's my story.
Great story.
Bernie 2020. Okay. Oh, God. People. That is my fifth wish. We're going to build a time machine. You're all going to go back and vote for Bernie.
Our fallen hero.
Okay, should we talk about our top three favorite things with coffee before Amanda just cuts our mics off like we're at the Academy Awards?
The orchestra is playing. Yeah. I love coffee ice cream. Mm. I love regular old coffee. Mm.
And how do you take your coffee?
It changes. I was really, I'll go through phases where I drink a latte. I go through phases where I drink a non-dairy latte. I've been drinking lately from, I'm sorry to say, Starbucks, because it's just convenient. Mm. Cause there's one in my suburban neighborhood, but,
sure.
I've been getting an iced latte from Starbucks, which is not very good. I gotta say, doesn't taste good, but I still drink them anyway. I don't know why.
So you had a Trenti?
No, it's like 800,000 calories. Yeah, because I put whole milk in there. I'm like, yeah, give me regular milk.
Hell yeah, whole milk. Look, if somebody you're with gets skim milk or 1% in their latte, that's a red flag. Run away from that person.
If I'm at a nice place, I like a delicious Americano.
Love an Americano.
But yeah, just I like regular coffee. I also do, since we're talking about Starbucks, I do like a Starbucks coffee frappuccino with an extra shot of espresso in there. Pro tip.
That's amazing.
It's not very, you know, it cuts the sweetness and still gives you the jolt of caffeine.
Sure.
So you get a really kind of delicious treat with extra coffee flavor.
Let me ask you a quick question here, Nicole. I'm going to interject before I give you my favorites. Say you're on a first date with someone, everything seems to be going really well, and you're taking a walk, and then you're like, let's get a coffee. And he gets up to the stand and he goes, yeah, maybe I'll have a large Java.
No.
He calls it Java. Could you date someone that calls it Java?
I mean, I guess in this scenario, I'm dating someone who's like 58 years old.
You're at the Central Perk.
Also, I just can't imagine a first date that's going really well, and then I stop at a coffee stand that's open all night that we're walking. I guess
it's a day date. It's a day date.
Oh, okay. So I would never do that.
And then you look down, and he's wearing those shoes that are actually shaped like feet. And then
I could never. I don't think go on a first date with someone during the daytime.
Oh, I've done it, and it's fine. It's actually never worked out. But that's because I think I have emotional issues. It's me, not you. Do you have any other things you want to talk about with coffee that you like?
No. Don't you want to tell us your three coffees?
I've been dying to. I like tiramisu.
I love tiramisu.
I love it. I love mole. I have started giving myself a mole enema. And I tell you what, you have...
Ooh, spicy.
You have not lived until you have given yourself a mole enema.
I agree.
It's confusing what's what, but all in the end.
I just had to picture you washing your towels.
Yeah, well, that's why I am working for Big Towel. So I also love coffee ice cream. And I, as you know, one of the only things that I don't really like is sweet yogurt. But when I was younger, I used to like yogurt and I used to love coffee yogurt. And my mom would let me have it even when I was like really young. Well, what's the difference between coffee yogurt and coffee ice cream? I mean, come on.
I don't know, but there is. Well, first of all, coffee ice cream isn't sour.
Mm, yeah, it's not that sour. Well, anyway, those are things that I like with coffee. Oh, and a good coffee face scrub is nice too. A little honey and coffee. That's great. Great for your face. Guys, this was a fun episode. We laughed, we cried. We got our Erin Brockovich on. That's another very serious story I shouldn't make fun of. Apologies to Julia Roberts.
Apologies to Erin Brockovich, who's a real person.
She is. She sure is. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening. And Nicole, I love you. And
I love you.
Let's chat on the phone after this, shall we? Okay. Hasta la pasta. Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.